Welcome to Dakota Midday. Good afternoon. I'm Kara Hetland, and it is Wednesday and time for our Dakota Political Junkies. Joining me this week are Roger Whittle of the Watertown Public Opinion. Roger, thank you for being with us today. Sorry.
Nice to be here, Kara.
Too many T's in there. And also Jonathan Ellis with the Sioux Falls Argus Leader. Jonathan, thanks for being here as well.
Hey, it's windy out there, Kara.
Hey, I heard there's reports of snow flurries in Sioux Falls, Marion area.
That is true. That is true. It's here.
It's here. Yeah. Okay, well, here we go. It's also political season in its finest. Let's start with what's happening in Washington, D.C. Representative Kristi Noem says she's going to support Paul Ryan in his bid for Speaker of the House.
Yeah, that not really a big surprise there. I mean, Kristi Noem has been on the Ways and Means Committee now since being reelected, and that obviously Paul Ryan has been the chairman of the Ways and Means Committee. And, you know, I would think that I think politically they're pretty close together where they're at. I mean, they're politically conservative, but you know, they're not so far right. They're not part of the, you know, sort of the Tea Party caucus. So I'm not surprised at all that Kristi Noem would be a supporter. In fact, she's actually scheduled to give sort of a nominating speech within the Republican caucus on behalf of, I think she's one of, my understanding is there's a nominating speech, and then Kristi Noem and another Republican representative will give seconding speeches on behalf of Paul Ryan within the caucus. And I'm told that, you know, it's very brief. It'll be about a 60-second speech on Paul Ryan, and apparently Ryan, my understanding is Ryan actually approached Kristi to ask her if she would be willing to give a speech in the caucus. So, you know, they seem like they're cut from the same cloth to me politically.
When is the vote?
I believe the caucus vote is today, and maybe Roger knows, and that the actual speakership vote is tomorrow, if I'm getting my schedule correct on that. But I think there's also some issues going on with the budget they're voting on, so that could be in flux.
Yeah, the actual vote for the speaker will be tomorrow, and I'm not even sure if the nomination vote is today, or they could hold them both on the same day, for all we know.
Yeah.
Depends on what else they have going on, probably.
Paul Ryan has a bold to-do list: fix the tax code, rebuild the military, lift people out of poverty. Do you see that happening in this Congress?
No.
I mean, to put it mildly, huh?
I'll let Roger take a poke at that one, but probably not.
Well, yeah, I would agree that. They're lofty goals and they're admirable goals, but you know, nothing really is changing in the House these days. We're going to have a new speaker, but it's still going to be the same group of hard right conservative Republicans that are not going to compromise on anything. And we've seen what gets done when there's no compromise in Washington, which is nothing. But I think Paul Ryan will do his best. I know in talking with Kristi Noem, she has worked closely with him on the House Ways and Means Committee, and she has seen the way he goes about things, the way he reaches across to other people, the way he works hard to get things done. That's why she's supporting him for the speaker. If anybody can do it, it's probably him, but I don't think anybody can do it.
Speaking of hard right conservatives, Donald Trump has kind of taken a tumble in the polls in Iowa. Surprise?
Not really. I think we were all expecting that to happen. I would have been very surprised if Donald Trump would have won in Iowa. If you look at the recent history of the Iowa caucuses, I think the last two winners have been Mike Huckabee and Rick Santorum, these kind of very, very social conservative types, and Donald Trump certainly doesn't fit that mold. I'm not sure this is going to mean he's completely done in the race, but I think the writing's on the wall for him in Iowa, but he'll probably he'll rebound in some other primaries later on.
Yeah, I think that's right, Roger. I mean, and I think that, you know, you do look at you know, you have to be to win the Republican nomination in Iowa. Typically, you know, you're going to be somebody, at least in recent history, is going to be somebody who's pretty socially conservative. Donald Trump does not fit that bill. However, you know, he is still well liked from people who want. I mean, he was in Sioux City. We were covering him yesterday. I mean, people who like the fact that he's an outsider. And so Ben Carson sort of captures that outsider status, and perhaps is, you know, more socially conservative. And I think that that's why you've seen perhaps an elevation of him in the polls in Iowa. There.
Does South Dakota voters mirror Iowa voters?
No. Not really. I think there are certainly pockets of Iowa voters that are closer to what you see here, predominantly in South Dakota, particularly in northwestern Iowa. But I mean, just to, you know, give you an example. I mean, you know, South Dakota hasn't voted for a Democratic, you know, presidential nominee since 1964, and Iowa in the last four elections. I mean, three of them have been carried by Democrats. So, there are certainly some issues, agriculture issues and things that voters care about, but there are two distinct political cultures in Iowa and South Dakota.
So when candidates are so close to the South Dakota border, do they tailor their message to South Dakota, or do we not matter at all?
I have not detected it that we matter. in all seriousness, we've only seen, as far as I know, we've only seen one candidate in South Dakota, and that was Ben Carson earlier this summer for a fundraiser. I don't know, and when they are in northwestern Iowa, I don't know that they need to tailor their message for South Dakota, because I think they fit together there.
Okay. Roger, any thoughts?
I would agree with that. I mean, they're in Iowa because of the Iowa caucuses, and that's what they're trying to win to get some momentum going into the other earlier primaries. And being farther away from Iowa than Jonathan is, I would not see them changing their message to placate any South Dakota voters.
Not even the South Dakota media?
Jonathan?
Well, I don't know if they have to. Okay. I mean, I think what they would say in Northwest Iowa would resonate with a lot of voters in this state anyway. So I don't know that they need to tailor their message necessarily. You know, and really, with the exception of 2008, I mean, we just haven't had any in recent history. You know, since the primaries have been so late, we haven't had really any presidential action at all.
And do you think Iowans are wishing or wanting more specifics from Donald Trump? Is that?
Well, I mean, Dana Ferguson, our reporter here who was in Sioux City yesterday, I mean, she interviewed some people. I think they were actually South Dakotans, but she interviewed some people who, you know, said they don't care about the fact that he doesn't have, you know, specific proposals for on specific policy. They just like the fact that he's unvarnished. His appeal to people is that they feel like he's not just trying to walk the political line and say what people want to, you know, think that they want to hear. I mean, he's saying it like he's a true believer what he talks about. So I think that resonates with a lot of people who are just kind of sick and tired of hearing politicians blah 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 blah.
And at this point, it's probably better that he keeps any specifics to himself, because that could do nothing but bring him down in the polls. I find it interesting that the same thing happened several years ago in Minnesota when they were sick of the establishment politicians. We had two highly well-known people running for governor, and Jesse Ventura came in and won. And everyone was thinking the same thing that they're thinking now with Donald Trump, that this is an outsider and it's going to be good. It didn't work out so well in Minnesota, and I'm surprised that people aren't drawing those similarities now.
Yeah, the difference, and you're right with Jesse Ventura, the difference is, you know, if Donald Trump somehow were to win, I mean, at least he would be from one of the two prevailing parties, you know, whereas Jesse was sort of an outsider. He didn't have a political party to call home, you know.
Let's move to some local issues, statewide issues anyway, and let's start with marijuana sales in Flandreau. A legal battle brewing, do you think, in the legislature?
It sure seems like it's going to. Our attorney general is expressed no willingness to compromise on this situation with the tribe. There's a law on our books that says if you have marijuana in your system, or the chemical in marijuana, THC, then you're guilty of possessing. And that stuff can stay in your bloodstream for, I think, up to 30 days after using marijuana. So it's making it almost impossible for people to go in to these facilities and then leave without breaking the law. The tribe wants the legislature to get rid of that law that's saying if you have it in your body, you're in possession of it. And I really don't see the legislature making that move to facilitate the tribe in this.
Can't really stay at that hotel for 30 days, can you?
It would get a little pricey, I think.
I think, you know, hey, by the way, Roger, we're about half. It's about halfway between us, isn't it?
Right. You want to meet there sometime?
I'll be honest here. This is. I think this is very dangerous political ground for Marty Jackley. I mean, I think that if he wants to come across as being hard on this, and we're gonna test people, and this is dangerous stuff. I mean, hey, South Dakotans may not be at the point where, you know, they're interested in you know, legalizing or decriminalizing marijuana or even legalizing medical marijuana. We may not be there, but what I don't think people are going to tolerate is having law enforcement people sitting outside the reservation, pulling people over and forcing them to do and take blood tests or what. I mean,
can they force a blood test though?
Well, I mean, how are you going to find out if they have THC in their system? And I mean, if he's going to play the game of this is, I mean, this is that borders on police state stuff. I mean, that's really overkill. And you know, you could say, well, I'm just enforcing the law and all that other stuff. But you know, you also have discretion, prosecutorial discretion. And so I think that you know, this is dangerous area for him, depending on how this plays out.
And yes, Kara, they can force you to take a blood test because when you get a driver's license, you have the implied consent that if asked for a breath test or a blood test, you're going to give it or you lose your license.
Yeah, they only need to say that you know have some kind of probable cause, and I mean, frankly, they can make that up. So
yeah. You know, not signaling your lane change,
right? I mean, so this is you know, I think that. The way this is going to play out is going to be very interesting, for sure.
Well, and then what does this do to overall race relations?
Well, I certainly don't think it helps. I know we're leading into the group that has wanted a new race relations committee appointed in South Dakota to see how what advances have been made since the last one, which was during the Mickelson administration. Issues like this certainly are going to be a stumbling block, I think.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the tribes across the country have sort of gotten the green light from the federal government that they're not going to get. The federal government is basically saying it's okay to do this, and so that's where the tribe gets, you know, its authority to do these things from the federal government, not the state government, and so the state people can whine all they want about it, but at the end of the day. You know, it's not up to them, and you know, what does it do with race relations? I don't know. I mean, I think, and frankly, look, I've never made a secret of my disdain for the war on drugs, and what I feel is really has been a travesty for America. But I think that you know, this tribe is showing some entrepreneurship here, and it's going to be interesting to see how this all plays out.
Can we let it play out? Or will the legislature step in and try and do something?
Yeah, the legislature can't really do anything.
They can't do anything.
Except leave our laws the way they are and leave it up to the state to go into their police state mode, as Jonathan said. So yeah, he's right. It's going to be interesting. I can't wait.
And November 9th, we only have a couple of minutes, but November 9th, the deadline for petitions. Are we going to see surprises? We see a new one coming up, brewing up?
I was kind of going over that list today, and there will be several of them that just won't make it. I bet, you know, that. So I think a lot of people are concerned about, well, we're going to have a ballot with 12, 13, or whatever, how many on there. There won't be that. There will be a lot, but we'll see. I think a few of them will fall short, for sure.
I know while walking into the Hobo Day football game last Saturday, I was accosted by several petition seekers wanting my signature. It seemed like on many of them. So yeah, there will be probably more than usual. That's for sure.
Okay. Well, we'll get more in depth on those next time. But I want to thank you both for taking time and coming on today. I really appreciate it.